Welcome one, welcome all. Step right up, step right up, ladies and gentlemen. Portal Gaming Podcast, episode 169, A Mess of Things, is coming at you right now. Howdy, everybody. Portal Game Podcast, a podcast brought to you by a store called The Portal, which is located in Manchester, Connecticut. For more information, you can go to www.theportalct.com. You can check us out on Facebook, The Portal, and on Twitter, at PortalGaming60. That's where you will find me, The Brant, your host for this episode. You can also check out our brand new YouTube channel. It's less than a year old, so I'll keep saying that. Step into the portal, where you'll be transformed, not into the portal, but currently into my home, the Portal Home Studio, where I'm recording this episode live today. Hello, hello, I am live on YouTube. So for this episode, I'm going to review a stack of games, as I always do. I am by myself. It's a solo episode. I don't have a guest reviewing with me. I'm going to answer any questions that might pop up in the chat. Who knows? It's a morning. There may be people, there may not. And then I'm going to talk about cleaning up games after we make a mess of things. How do we clean up our game? So that's going to be that. It's good to see everybody. It's good to talk to all of you. If you're listening on the podcast, you can check this out on the YouTube channel. If you're on the YouTube channel, you can listen to our podcast. You can go back and have 168 other episodes of pure joy that you can listen to there as well. My microphone seems a little low, so I'm trying to figure out how to get that to be a little louder, but hopefully it's good. And away we go. All right. Oh, here we go. 169th episode of the podcast. Wow. So really, the podcast is reserved for reviewing games. That's what's happening here. The YouTube channel is where we play through games and talk through other things. So that's mostly what I'm going to jump into. Hope everybody's doing well. I'm headed off to Martha's Vineyard, which is an island, off the coast of Massachusetts, specifically Cape Cod region, which is kind of this south of Boston. There's like a crescent-shaped piece, ocean piece. Here's Emily joining me, as she does, as well. If you're watching and you want to throw a question in the chat, I will answer those towards the end of the podcast. If not, no worries, but we can go through all of that as well. So hope everything's going well. Happy summer, everybody. Hopefully we're getting a chance to get out and about, stretch our legs, move out of our houses, maybe play in some small game groups again. Our store is open for play. It's not really events right now, but it is small groups can play in the store and whatnot. And you can just kind of check out the website or stop in the store for the policies because they are ever-changing, so I am not going to try to figure out what they are at the time you are listening to all of this. So there's that. All right, let's jump in and review a pile of games. So first up, I've got from Unstable Games, a little game called Happy Little Dinosaurs, and the tagline is amazing. Smile, it's almost over. So this is a game where you are trying to flee from the a doomed apocalypse, and in doing so, you have to flee 50 spaces. The game itself is somewhat interesting. It's very heavy, kind of take that and whatnot, but you're trying to flee from the apocalypse or just be the last dinosaur left on Earth, and then you win the game. So what's going to happen is everybody's going to get a set of these cards, like point cards or something, and you play one face down, and it's from a draw pile, sorry. Everybody flips their card, and whoever has the highest is going to run that number of spaces. Whoever's lowest is going to actually have to take this bad card. I don't remember what it's called. Negative card? Apocalypse card? Something like that. And whatnot. So you'll have to take that card, and they kind of come in three different colors. If you get three of the same color, or if you get three different colors, you're doomed. You're out of the game, so you're really not wanting to collect those. But as you collect them, each dinosaur has different bonuses and things that they get from having those. But the cards are great, like downpour. When it rains, it pours, but only on you. So it very much focuses in on that negativity. Life is going great. Just kidding, of course. You're attacked by saber-toothed squirrels. You can see these on the podcast, or on the YouTube channel if you watch there. Bad hair day. Shark with legs runs after you. You get stomped on. Yada, yada, yada. Your beach day turns into a whale of a surprise, and he gets swallowed by a whale. So they're really cute and really funny. So it's definitely that kind of game that makes you laugh. Once you play your cards here, these point cards, you then have all sorts of ways that they can affect other players, and there's these interrupt ones that you can play as well, disaster cards or something, to change everything. And then the dinosaurs are really cute, too. You've got Criceratops and Stego, Nervous Rex. So they're really quite adorable. So again, it's a big take that game, but it's 30 minutes. It says 60 on the box. I don't know. Maybe if you play with a bunch of people, you can expand it to 5 and 6 players. I've found these unstable games. This is the kind of take that game that I actually really enjoy. Again, the game is okay, but the artwork and the cards are just so funny that it just leads to some of that conversation. So Happy Little Dinosaurs is a win. I'm actually going to bring that one with me to Martha's Vineyard. So we're going to slide it over there. And Unstable Unicorns was their first one. They've got others I don't remember off the top of my head, but that one's really good. Okay, a game I don't have in hand because there's some that I have played. I played them multiple times often, but I haven't. But I don't have them in my hands anymore, either at the store, borrowed them from somebody, whatever it was. So this is Phaim from 2F Spiel, and that's Friedman Friess. So Friedman Friess is well known for making these very eclectic style games. So Phaim most reminds me of Concordia. Terra Mystica was always one of my favorite games, and then Clans of Caledonia came out, and it felt like it was going to be the same game, and then all of a sudden you realize, wow, this is like the same looking game, but plays totally different. That's how Phaim is to Concordia. Like, it looks and feels like it's going to be the same, but it's totally different. So in Phaim, you're in the Phaim region of Egypt. You've got kind of this delta with this irrigation channel that's been cut, and you're tasked under Amenhotep III with, developing the land, harvesting the land, making crops, and then developing it into settlements, cities, and ultimately, palaces or whatever they are in those various regions. So you get a set of 5 cards, and I played solo and I played multiplayer as well, and it plays very similar, even though the goals are very different in terms of what's happening. So either way, you're kind of playing the same way. So you have this set of 5 cards. There's really only 3 different cards because 3 of them are farmers. And the cards completely run the game. So a card will just say, oh, place a farmer somewhere if there's adjacent to a farmer, if there's no farmers anywhere. Remove the crocodile that's in that spot. Every time you remove a crocodile, you get a buck. And then harvest that region. So there's basically 3 resources. There's grain, there's grapes, and there's stone. So you'll collect whatever resource was in that region. And then you will have that resource that you could spend. And then future cards will say, spend those resources to place a settlement and earn reputation, which is kind of how you decide who wins and or money. And then turn that into a city or a town, I think is the first place. Or you can clear a region, then put a vineyard where there are grapes. Or you can put a grain silo where there's different things. Or you can build roads, and roads can connect things, and you get points for being the first person to connect the settlement or a monument or the other sites on the board. And the cards just keep coming out. Now, what's really interesting in those cards, at the beginning of the game, you take 12 cards out of the deck. There's 56 cards. You shuffle them up. You lay them out in numerical order, so they all go 2 through 112. I imagine it skips numbers so that there could be expansions. And you lay them out in numerical order. The top 4 get shuffled into like a final deck, and all these cards are out. The first 4, the lowest 4, are available for you to purchase. So on your turn, instead of playing a card, you could purchase one of these cards. And then you draw a new card and you fit it where it goes numerically. So it doesn't guarantee that everybody slides down conveyor belt style. Things might slide back or whatever, but it kind of keeps those cards there. And there's various rules for getting discounts on cards as they don't get purchased and whatnot. But that's basically what's happening. And the cards just range. Again, there's 56 cards. It comes with a whole glossary that explains every card. If you go to the channel Step Into the Portal, you could see me playing through it, and I'm reading from that glossary very often, so it's a lot of almost a tutorial, if you will, on how to play, but in general, I think worked out pretty well. So that's kind of what's happening there. And then the last action you can do on your turn is, ooh, I forgot the name of it, assignment, I know it starts with an A, I apologize, I can't remember. But this is basically getting your cards back. So you pull a couple workers off the board, get money, you count your cards in your hand, you get money for the less cards you have. And then you could take the top 3 cards that you've played. So the most 3 recent, you're creating a stack, right? Last in, first out kind of style. You take the top 3 cards, and then you can pay to get the future cards. So in solo, you have to pay a little bit more. It's like one for the first, two for the second, three for the third. In regular, you just pay one per card. So you get those cards back. So that's kind of a decision. Do I want to play this card and bury it? Do I want to pay for this card? What do I want to be my fourth, fifth, sixth card so I could get them back? And then also, some number of cards come out of the market in solo and two-player, I think even three-player, two cards come out of the market. In four and five-player, one card comes out of that market. It's out of the game. Then you add more cards. And the game keeps going until the market is dry. Then you go to that second deck, and there's a bunch of natural disasters that come out. Once the four natural disasters come out, then everybody can no longer do that phase where they get cards back. And there's cards that are worth victory points. You can quit the game, take the victory points, and be done. Once everybody does that, the last player to quit gets no points, and then you see who won the game. And there's really nothing for resources or anything, so it's just straight points. See what you get is kind of the idea there. So, okay, that is Fam from 2F Spiel. Next up, another game I don't have currently, but it's Paris from Kramer and Kiesling. So this, I believe, is a Kickstarter game, and I think they put an expansion, so I really wanted to check this game out. So Paris is a big wheel. As you know, as you may or may not know, Paris is built in a big wheel. There's a center hub and all these spokes that go out. And so what you're doing is you're basically investors in Paris. Oh gosh, what is the time frame? I want to say it's late 1800s, early 1900s is what I'm thinking. Apologies if I'm wrong on that. So, really actually quite simple game. You're trying to, again, kind of amass the most reputation in the city. So what you're going to do is, on your turn, it's really quite simple. You have these keys, and you have some money. And you have options. So you can either invest in one of those hubs by putting a key kind of near the bank and you get money. And I think it goes 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 might be the numbers that you get off of that. Maybe it maxes at 7. I can't remember. I think there's only 6 of them. So you get that money, or you can take a key and you can move it to the buildings. Oh, I forgot. Sorry. There's a stack of buildings at the start of every turn. You draw a building and place it where it goes. So all 6 parts of the city are named. So when you draw, it goes exactly in a certain spot. So once you have a key in a section of the city, if there's a building there, you can move that key over and basically pay the money. So it'll cost 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or 8 to invest and purchase that building. When you do that, you're going to get different rewards and bonuses. Mainly you get control points equal to what you paid for it for that region, so that if it's worth anything at the end of the game, you'll get those points. But also you can get bonuses. So like the ones and twos allow you to move up on the little bonus track. And that track is kind of it goes around and it's move as far forward as you want, but you can never move backward. So there's all these tiles laid out that give you various bonuses. Also, when you purchase a building, you get a little resource, and those resources are needed to build landmarks, which are the bigger buildings, which I'll talk about in a second, as well as to invest in the larger like 8-point buildings where you need resources. The 3.1 lets you pay coins to be able to move forward on the bonus track. The 4 and 5 don't give you anything, but they give you points towards the end game scoring. And the 8 immediately gives you 2 victory points in terms of that. And it gives you the 4, 5, and 8 also give you these stars. There's like bronze, silver, and gold stars. And those you can spend for victory points when you build landmarks. So what are landmarks? So I can build a landmark anytime. They're laid out amongst the top of the board. The various famous, you know, elements and buildings, Eiffel Tower obviously being one of them, in Paris. And so you have all of these buildings and you can, these landmarks, and you can pay for them. So they range from like 9 to I think maybe 18, I want to say, or 16 is their cost. So you can pay their cost, you can build them in any region, and then you move a key up to that spot, and then immediately they tell you, oh, now that you've done that, you can spend those stars that you got to score victory points. So that's really like a big goal of the game, is to collect a bunch of those stars and then be able to spend them to build the landmarks. The landmarks also cost the resources that I mentioned earlier. So that's essentially the idea with the game. You're collecting these bonus tiles, and you're building these buildings to have control. What's interesting is that a region of one of those spokes or sections of the city is not worth anything until there's 4 keys in that region. Once there's 4 keys, then somebody can pick one of the endgame tiles and say, okay, this location is now worth 20 points to first place, 10 points to second place, 5 points to third place, or whatever it might be. So it works along that way. The other thing I didn't mention is you can move keys up. So if like I have the 2 building, but now I want to buy the 8, I can just pay 6 for the differential and move it over. I also have to give up whatever resources are necessary. So again, it's one of those kind of classic style Euros where the rules are really, really light, but the decisions go deeper in terms of what's happening. I thought that as we were playing, specifically in a 2-player game, I thought it would be a little weird, like, oh, there's like a control aspect and you can just control that section and I'll control this section. But the 4 keys really made a difference. So I thought that was actually kind of really interesting in terms of needing the 4 keys and then deciding, ooh, do I want to add the 4th key and then try to go for control of that? Or do I want to just let it be? Or do I want to put a 4th key and make that section worth very little because they're controlling it? Because those values worth different amounts. So in the end, I found it pretty fun. I found it enjoyable. I would really like to play Paris again. A neat little game from Kramer and Kiesling, and I'd be interested to see what the expansion does. Again, those are really fun when you have light rules, but good decisions. I would say the setup on this game and the presentation is very big, so it doesn't feel like a simple game because of all the presentation, actually hiding everything behind these things. But it's nice to see that as well. All right, next up is a game that I've gone back and forth on, so I think I'm ready to have kind of my final review here. So this is Hadrian's Wall. So Hadrian's Wall is a game from Bobby Hill and from Garfield Games and Renegade Games. And this is a flip and write or roll and write. And you are tasked with defending Hadrian's Wall and scoring points. And so it's giant. You get 2 sheets that are all cut out. And several episodes ago, I want to say like 162, Eric Summer talked about this one as well. So I'm not going to go into so many of the details, but you're flipping cards every turn to gain resources, and then you're basically spending those resources, whether they be workers of various sorts, soldiers, etc., servants, and you spend them, and you're like trading them in. Oh, I trade these resources. I trade stone for this, and I trade this for that. And you've kind of got a whole section of the wall in the city there, and then you've got a whole section of like patrons and citizens with tracks, and there's a gladiator track and a trader track and a stables track and temples, and I can't remember the 5th one off the top of my head, and they all work kind of different, but it actually, as complex as it is, once you jump in and figure out those tracks and just try it, they generally make sense. I think the gladiator one's kind of the most confusing, but even still, it's not that bad in terms of what's happening there. So that's kind of how that works, and you're just going through rounds and you play over these rounds, and then the picks attacks, you draw all these cards and you see where they attack on the wall. You kind of have a left side, a right side, and a center, and you go from there to see how all of that works and whatnot. So that's kind of that idea. So the game is really fun. Like, it's fun to trade all those resources. It's fun to try different things and whatnot. The negative that I'm finding with the game is I consistently score the same amount, upper 50s, lower 60s. Now, Larry played his first game. He scored 85 points. So I don't know how he did it. I tried to replicate what he was doing because he still had the thing in the box because he had borrowed it to play solo. And I tried to like fill in the whole left-hand wall and just the citizens. And I still scored like 67 points or something like that. And I don't want to be one to complain like, oh, I can't score enough points. Like, this game is no fun. That's just kind of a silly complaint to go to. But it is a little weird in terms of, like, I don't know what I'm learning. I don't know what I'm gaining by the various things that I'm doing. So it feels a little frustrating at times. Like, ah, oh, this is just coming out the same each time. And whether I play with people or play solo, it kind of just comes out to that same end, so I don't feel like I've learned or like the different tracks haven't, oh, this is what I'm going to do and this is how I'm going to guide that. So ultimately, I don't know that it's a game that's going to stick around for me. It's just, it's really fun to do, but I feel like after trying it, like literally 10 times, it just comes out to the same scores and, I could kind of take that or leave that. So that's where I've been with Hadrian's Wall, but I know people have been loving this game, so I definitely think it's worth a play or two. But I feel like the replayability is a little tricky for me on that front. So that is Hadrian's Wall. Next up is a little game, actually, we played on our channel, so you could see a playthrough there. And this is Lions of Lydia. And this is from Bellwether Games and from Johnny Pack. Johnny Pack is definitely a hot up-and-coming designer, or already there, in terms of all that. Lots of games have come out lately. And then all of a sudden I'm in a blank when I try to think of them. Coloma is the one I can think of off the top of my head. He helped with Merchant's Cove and some others there. This is a really light game. This says like 30 to 60 minutes. Really short, not really light. Again, it's one of those ones where the mechanisms are really simple, but the play is really fun. So in Lions of Lydia, you are creating this currency. This is the, you know, they created the first system of currency with coins. And you're taking these merchants out of a bag, and then you play merchants to this a certain section of the city. And when you play them to certain sections of the city, you get various effects and different things. And so if you play them to one of the outer places, you can collect resources. And you have a little resource board, and you're trying to trigger that up. And then you can also place them in spots where you're then able to purchase buildings. There's like four sections, and you can purchase these buildings to add to your tableau. Then you can also develop those buildings by spending those resources. However, if you get those resource tracks to the top, you get a bonus. So it's kind of having you hold on to resources, kind of spend them in one fell swoop. So you can get these bonuses to move your little column up to gain various things. There's also the Lydian merchants, which are gold, and they give you other effects where you can like get resources and various other things, be able to trigger various effects. The game also comes with a whole bunch of expansions, so you can actually see us playing with a high number of the expansions. I think we played with like 6 or 7 of the 8, is what I want to say, or 5 of the 7. I don't remember off the top of my head anymore. But that was really fun. So you can watch Kathy and I do that in terms of all that. So that was Lions of Lydia, really enjoyable. Oh, I didn't mention how the game ends. Sorry. So eventually you develop those, and once somebody gets 8 developed, that kind of ends the game, and the other player gets another turn, and you collect the little fountain from the center where you can score for all the coins you have left over, because the coins are wild. That's a big piece of the Lydian merchants I missed. I apologize. I'm a little distracted because I feel like this microphone isn't working, so I'm a little nervous, but we're going to keep going, because it is what it is. The Lydian merchants allow you to trade resources of type whatever color section of the city you go to, four coins, and then coins are wild, but I believe you're limited to 10 Lydian coins. The Lions of Lydia is what those coins are. So that's kind of that idea in terms of all that. But yeah, really fun game. Really have enjoyed that one a lot. And the replayability with all the different buildings is really interesting. So that's been quite enjoyable. That is Lions of Lydia from Johnny Peck and Bellwether Games. Definitely check it out. It's been one of my favorite of this year. And then last up is really a game that I have to give a first impression to, because I've only played, I guess I've played 3 times, actually. But it has a campaign, and I haven't played the campaign. I really want to. So this is Veil Wraith. I've just been so busy with ending school and all those things, I didn't get a chance. But I did do a playthrough of the first part of the campaign on the channel. And you can see that. And so this is a solo-only game from Tristan Hall and Hall or Nothing Games. Hall or Nothing Productions. I make that mistake a lot. And you are a Veil Wraith. You're trying to go cut through memories and kind of like prevent this land from being taken over. You're fighting off all these enemies, and it's really interesting. You have like 3 different actions that you can do that are up in front of you, and they have different values to them. There's fighting. Oh, I'm going to forget them now. Fighting, not adventuring. What is it called? Influence, and sorry, I'm just going to find the third one, and exploring, that's what it is. And you're trying to find these keys, and then you can use these keys to open the portal to get to the next spot inside all of this, and the keys are buried in the deck amongst various adversaries, enemies, bosses, things like that. And so you have the 3 actions in front of you, and one will be a level 1, one or a value 1, value 2, value 3. And if you expend 1, you get whatever it is. So if I expend my value 3 fight, I can fight for 3, but then the card goes down the line, the other ones slide up. And so you're working through that, and then you can actually take one of them, tilt it 45 degrees, and add a token to it. So you can use one action, and you can kind of upgrade or advance one action each turn. And then you're flipping more cards and drawing more cards. And your cards are interesting because they're multi-use. Oh, I could use them for their effect, or I could use them for their explore, fight, or influence value for things I need to defeat. In terms of all that. And you're kind of working your way through, so it's very puzzly, very interesting in terms of what you're trying to do. And then as you collect these keys, which have to be explored, they have abilities that you can use. There's like a once per game, actually, is each one once per game? Yeah. There's 2 once per game abilities on each key, where you can take another action, and maybe it's draw another card, or defeat an enemy, or something like that. So you're trying to figure out what's the best time to do all that. Your timer is that you have like 20 health, and it's a different thing. I think it's called soul. And as those adversaries stay in front of you, they damage you. And if you get to zero, you lose. So you're trying to work on whatever the goals are, but you're trying to remove the enemies at the same time. And then the campaign lets you upgrade your deck because it's kind of a deck builder. I mean, you're drawing cards and you're playing them, and eventually you do reshuffle it. So it's deck builder. The deck building's very light in terms of what you're doing because you're not really adding a ton to there. But during the campaign, you upgrade that and add difference. So my first impressions were very good. I lost on the playthrough I did on the channel, but I think I had won prior to that, and I won afterwards, so I'm still progressing through. So I will update this as I go through the campaign, but it's pretty solid. I'm not super into solo games as much as I'm playing solo games on the channel. That's really to get the games out there for people, because I enjoy that. I enjoy showing somebody how to play a game, learning how to play a game, playing it through one time. But there's not a lot of stuff that I'm like, ooh, I can't wait to play this solo. That's not as big for me. But this one's pretty fun. It, like I said, it's a solo-only game, but I like the puzzle of this and the campaign nature. So we'll see where all that goes. That is Veilwraith from... It's a Veil Odyssey game from Hall or Nothing Productions. Awesome. That is the reviews for this episode. I believe that's six games that we reviewed there. And whatnot. Doesn't look like I have too many questions because I am recording relatively early in the morning, so that makes sense. So let me just move on to the topic that I wanted to talk about. So on the Dice Tower Facebook group, I was just thinking one day, and I was like, you know, it's funny, when I was a kid, we used to always say, winner cleans up, and then we'd run, and that was kind of our way of getting back at the winner. Like, haha, you won, now you have to clean up the game, and we'd run to go do whatever we're doing outside and leave them to clean up to try to make them feel bad for winning, I guess. Was the goal, which is a funny thing now. Because now I feel like we get to then and we're like, oh, okay, Brian won. Oh, Kathy won. Larry won. All right, let's all clean up. Like, the winning is not really that big of a deal. It's like the experience of the game. It's interesting how things have changed. Like, did we all have fun in terms of that? Did I have fun losing horribly? Did I have fun winning? Is all, even an interesting thing as adults. So I was just wondering if people still did the, like, winner cleans up. A lot of people said they did loser cleans up, and I thought, dang, I don't know if I would play in that group. Like, I've lost, and I have to clean up the game. But by far, the majority of hobby gamers were absolutely obsessed with cleaning up their own game. Like, okay, you can bag what I tell you, you can scoop up some components, you can organize things for me, but ultimately, my game, I get the say as to how I clean up the game. And I get it. It makes sense. You know, some of these Kickstarters or games where people have the inserts where they're going to know where everything goes and sleeved cards and all this kind of stuff. People are pretty particular. When I have people cleaning up with me, I mean, sometimes I'm particular. I'll be like, oh, let's try to put like the starting player stuff in a bag, or here's your bag and whatever. But honestly, if you want to sweep it in a bag, like, I'm into baggies and sometimes those little containers from, you know, the dollar store, throw some stuff in there. I'm not really that worried about how my game goes back in. There are a few, and like I said, some have the insert or some don't fit in the box a certain way. When we have a game day, and I put this on there too, and it panicked people, we often just sweep everything into the box bottom and the box top, the cover and the bottom, and then just set it aside. And at a later date, I'll just sort through all that and get that back together. And people were just like, oh my gosh. Now, it does get you to the next game faster, but sometimes people want a break, right? If you just played a 2.5-hour game, everybody wants to stretch their legs. So the cleanup part and the post-game discussion can be a big piece of it. But if it was like a 20-minute game and you're moving on to the next game, we'll just sweep that sucker into a box, set it aside, and then somebody will go through it later. I can tell you, however, I've been like, ooh, let's play this game. Pulled off my shelf, look at it, and go, oh no, it's not organized at all. Maybe we'll save that for another time. So it definitely can backfire. But I enjoy doing that as well, where I can just say, hey, let's move on to the next game. Don't worry about cleaning up. I'll take care of that for you. Even the same when people come over to play a game, if I can have it all set up for them so we can just start playing, we get to that kind of fun part and don't have to worry about the setup. But again, people are going to different. Your mileage may vary because people like to do various things in terms of talking, you know, which is a big part of the hobby. Like, oh, you show up and we talk and we catch up and maybe we have a snack and then we set up the game together and we talk about that. We're kind of learning it together. And then as we take it down, like, this was our big game, so we're talking about the game and how did it go and when's our next night that we're going to play together and is there a cool down game we want to go or something like that. So there's all those elements that I can understand. So how about you? What do you do for cleaning up your games? Is it all you? Is it people can help? Is it clean it up later? Do you have like multiple tables? I know some people have like a basement setup, and I could see if I had four people, it would just be like move table to table. In fact, that's what we did when we were playing at the Portal over last summer during the pandemic. The whole back room we had blocked off, and we just would set up games on various tables and just move table to table, and then some later date we'd go back and pick the game up. We'd just leave it there. So do you have that bonus? Obviously, if you have cats or kids, or you know it's your dining room table that you're playing on, you don't have that. But let me know. You can tweet at me at PortalGaming60. You can send me an email, PortalGamingPodcast@gmail.com. You can find that Dice Tower thing, or you can comment right here in the video on YouTube if you would like, and let me know how you clean up your games. Well, that was a fast episode for today. I went through all those games, but it was kind of quick. Again, I'm still nervous about this audio. I keep looking down at this because it looks like it's not very high compared to where I usually am. I don't know if it's my microphone or whatever, but I'm sure it's fine. It might just be a little low. Nothing panic-inducing, so we should be good. Thanks, everybody, so much for listening. I am The Brant. This is episode 169, A Mess of Things. That's what I like to do with my games in terms of all that. Should be back. I think next week I'm going to try to do this live again from Martha's Vineyard. It's going to be my plan. So hopefully that'll all go well in terms of those things. But until next time, I'm The Brant, and I hope you